Okay, well, next up is all of us up here today. Everyone but Nancy has officially been introduced, but you pretty much got an introduction yesterday. So I think most people know Nancy. Nancy, Bryn, myself, and Alisa. And we are here to talk about termination of first-party S&Ts. So we're going to get started.
All right. Well, as we kick it off, I want to point out that the materials you have in your course book is an article written by Scott Stebler, I believe 2 years ago, 2019,
yeah.
And excellent resource, and it is what we are going off of largely. But we are going to kind of walk through those materials, but then also just talk and try to give everybody practical advice, things to watch out for, things to keep in mind as you're wrapping up a first party S&T, a first-party S&T. Now, the reason we are focusing on first-party S&Ts is because third-party S&Ts are way easier.
Yes.
And we know that because John and Benicia drilled it into our head yesterday that third-party special needs trusts do not require a payback
provision. We got that one, Benicia.
That is right. And it's really that state payback provision that makes us wary as we're wrapping up a first-party trust, because we want to make sure absolutely that we're complying with our obligations, not overstepping our authority and dissolving a first-party trust. So we're trying to walk that line, but also at the same time have sensitivity for the needs of the surviving family of that trust beneficiary. Thank you. I tried to adjust it and it made so much noise. All right, we're adjusting our technology up here. All right, so just as a brief recap, why do we have this payback provision? And you've heard before about OBRA 93. I think I practiced a few years in the field before I really understood what OBRA 93 was. It was just a reference people threw out very casually. So OBRA 93 was the law that basically made us able to create first-party S&Ts. So prior to the creation of OBRA 93, if I had a revocable trust, it was still my asset. If I put my assets into an irrevocable trust, well, that was a transfer, and now I was disqualified as a result of a transfer penalty. And so there wasn't really a tool at all for people to move their own assets aside in a protected mechanism where we could keep assets and still get benefits through government programs. So then OBRA 93 rolled out, and they said, yes, you can move your own assets into a first-party trust, but we do have this requirement that we have the state payback provision. And there's a big exception to that. I tried to make a change to this slide and I failed to do so. So there should be a number 4. There is an exception to making payback to the state. And what is that, Haley?
A pooled trust can retain the funds before Medicaid is paid back. And currently the master pooled trust has an option to leave a percentage. We don't retain anything automatically. Other pooled trusts have automatic retentions. Others have similar situations to us. So just when you're looking at a pooled trust, know that that is an option, is for the trust to actually retain funds before Medicaid is paid back.
And I would say as a word of warning, Haley mentioned that some pooled trusts have this automatic payment to the trust at termination. So just if you're working with a family or enrolling someone in a pooled trust, if it's not one that you've worked with frequently and are familiar with, look very carefully at those termination provisions to make sure that the funds aren't ending up somewhere unintended. Now, Haley, I'll be honest. I've had some clients who said, okay, so When my child passes, if there's any money left in there, I have the option of leaving it with the Ark of Texas. Well, I don't know these folks. I don't know these people. So what keeps them from hanging on to assets and resisting distributions in an effort to assure that they get to hang on to a bigger chunk when my child passes? Mm-hmm. I think I'll pass, and I'll just choose to send it to the state instead. What would you say in response to that and try to relieve people that that won't be an issue.
Well, I mean, anytime we talk to families, of course, we're going to assure them. I honestly don't even know how much you've left or if you've left anything when we're looking and making distribution decisions, because it's on the joinder agreement. It's not something that we're looking at, you know, on a regular basis. But also, you know, our duty is to make sure that we are providing, you know, appropriate fiduciary responsibilities to our beneficiaries.